Today on Doomed! Get those calves ready. Beto O'Rourke is officially running for president. Beto. No. Let's not do that. Tonight, we're going to look into Beto O'Rourke's record. Who is Beto O'Rourke? Let's find out. Let's get right into it. Because joining me now to take this look at Beto is Mike Figueredo. Ooh, I did that better off the off-air. Mike Figueredo from The Humanist Report. Mike, thanks for joining me.
I am glad to be here, Matt. Thank you for having me on this incredibly important occasion. This is a momentous launch here.
Right. It's a big deal.
Yeah, my calves are ready, man.
We should probably explain to the uninitiated what that is, but not yet. Let's give it a little bit of I want people to wonder who aren't very on Twitter to wonder for a second, what the hell are these guys talking about? Mike, did I get that last name right? It's funny because you actually, before we started, said, hey, you don't have to worry about the last name. And I was like, dude, I got it. And then I right away fucked it up.
It's perfectly fine. It's Figueredo, but I am always 100% okay with people messing up my names because I kind of feel like it's karma. Like anytime I say anyone's name, I mess it up. It doesn't matter how simple it is. I mess up their names. So it's just par for the course, you know, for me. People who are Portuguese, they know how to pronounce it. I haven't met very many people that say it correctly. So just by default, I go into it expecting it to be mispronounced, and that's perfectly fine. But you did it really good on the first time, so kudos to you there, because that's hard to pull off.
Right. You know who else has that problem? Beto O'Rourke? I wonder if I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if it's Beto or Beto, and right. I kind of just switch back and forth between those two, because right. I don't know which one is correct.
Right. Listen, I'm not going to before anyone thinks I'm going this direction, I'm not going to be do that whole right wing attack where we're attacking his name. But I do think it's funny. I do think it's a little bit funny. He's welcome to go by whatever name he wants. I got no problem with it. But always in the back of my mind, I think to myself, could you imagine if like any other white guy tried to pull that? Imagine if Bernie Sanders said it's Bernardo. People would not let that go. People would not let that go.
Yeah. No, I'm with you because the right winger is like, I heard Tommy Lehrer and she was talking about this and she's like, no, let's call him Robert. Like it was such a huge gotcha.
Yeah.
It's like,
no.
I mean, it's stupid, but it's not a gotcha.
Yeah. I'm someone who says, this is my view. That's messed up. Screw that right wing line of attack. He could go by Beto, has however he wants. I don't care. Good for him. But I think everyone should be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mateo. This is Doomed with Mateo Binder.
I like that, yeah. I don't know what I would choose for mine, but I'd probably come up with something else, especially for my last name.
You do the opposite. You make it easier for everybody.
Yeah.
All right, so let's that was fun. But let's get serious now, because yeah. Beto is a very serious guy. He has strong convictions. I'm being extremely sarcastic. This is my summary of Beto O'Rourke, and maybe I shouldn't be giving this out before we get into it, but maybe it's also best to go this route because maybe it'll pull people in. I feel, you know, people online who support centrists and establishment Democrats really like to make comparisons to popular, you know, shows or books like, you know, I guess Harry Potter and Game of Thrones. So I thought about it for a bit. And to me, Beto O'Rourke is like the faceless men of Bravos. He is literally no one. unlike they had to do to Arya, poor Arya, they didn't have to beat it into him. He is happily no one. Because the dude stands for nothing. You can project whatever you want on Beto O'Rourke because he speaks in such vague nothingness, really.
It's all platitudes, all fluff. There's nothing there.
Right. And it's stunning. Stunning to me to see this because, listen, we can sit around and obviously you and me are Bernie Sanders supporters. It's clear as day. We don't try to hide it. And listen, if you want to support someone and you're doing news of any sort, whether it's straight up reporting or a progressive opinion and analysis, doesn't matter. Just be upfront with it. Who cares? That way we just know.
It's going to show through anyway for most people.
Right, exactly. So we're Bernie Sanders supporters, but I will say this straight up. I give credit to people like, well, don't say this for Elizabeth Warren because she is easily my second choice. If Bernie wasn't in the race, she'd go right up to the top. She'd be my number one. So Bernie, then Elizabeth Warren, easy picks, no problem. Now, without the two of them in the race, that's when it would get difficult for me. But I can say, compared to Beto O'Rourke, I can easily support someone like a Kamala Harris, a Kirsten Gillibrand, easily, no problem, over someone like Beto O'Rourke. Because at the very least, everyone has something in their past that we don't like, some more than others. We've all criticized the conservative past of Kirsten Gillibrand, the prosecutorial past of Kamala Harris, but they have come out and, to their credit, have taken a stand for progressive ideals, at the very least in some way, whether it be Medicare for all, whether it be, strong opinion on someone stepping down because of sexual assault allegations. These are things that they've stood up for, and more I can say, actually. Mm-hmm. Beto O'Rourke has not made any sort of opinion that would in any way be sort of brave. I guess that's the best way I could put it. I guess the closest thing is that video that was going around when he was running against Ted Cruz for the Senate in Texas. When he said that when he stood up for football players who were kneeling during the anthem. But I mean, that's sort of, I feel like that's even like a pretty popular opinion for Democrats. It's not like as controversial as telling Al Franken to stand down, step down, or even for in a lot of areas, probably coming out and saying they're for Medicare for all, full-hearted support for Medicare for all. He's done none of that. Give me your take on that, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just the way that, like, I tend to agree with you. Each person in this race, or most people in this race, they all kind of have their own lane, right? They're taking a position on something and they're trying to differentiate themselves. But when it comes to Beto O'Rourke, I don't know what his role is. And the same is true for Joe Biden, too, to be fair. But I don't know what Beto O'Rourke is all about. He is just the dude that is, he's trying to be the new Obama, and he's rolling up his sleeves and he's talking and he's all about hope and change. But other politicians like Kamala Harris, they know how to at least read the room. They're savvy enough to realize that this is not 2008 anymore. Elected, I've got to come hard with progressive policies like Medicare for all. Now, you can doubt whether or not they genuinely support it and whether or not they're just trying to, say they support Medicare for all in these popular positions just to pass our litmus tests as progressives. But at least they're trying to make some type of effort, whereas, like, I feel like Beto is just playing his own game. Like, he's playing by his own rules. And I think he doesn't realize that momentum that we saw in 2018 for him, it was because he was running against Ted Cruz. Like, I would have literally voted for a turd over Ted Cruz if given the opportunity. So I don't think he realizes that this is very different than running for Senate in Texas against Ted Cruz. And he still doesn't really realize what's going on in America currently. We're not all about, like I said this on my show, this isn't the hope and change era like he wants it to be. This is the I'm ready to burn shit down, eat the rich, grab my pitchfork era, because people are pissed. They're desperate. So I agree with you. I don't know what his role is or what he even thinks his role is, if he believes he has one at all.
Right. That's a great point. And I always cringe when I hear someone online or even on a pundit on cable news talk about how – much they miss miss President Obama. They opine for that era. Listen, I get it. Trump sucks. Fine. But we have to move on. And there's no going back. And even if we could, there's no going back. Because, like it or not, the Obama era is a reason we have a Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I'm not going to blame Obama himself for this. Him and his administration was just one, thing that out of many that led to where we are today. This goes back, decades. We could start, I guess, from Reagan to how we got to Donald Trump. How George W. Bush, had a major role to play in where we are now. But there's no doubt that Trump, if we're going to live through Trump, you got to take some things out of it that are for the better. And I'm not saying something he has specifically done. I'm saying just a natural occurrence that comes from a President Trump. And one of those things are people are being radicalized in a good way. People are realizing that there is no more room for this sort of centrist third way policies that got us here. There's no more room for these bipartisan, like you said, hope and change type of platitudes. It's time to fight back against Republicans, against the establishment, against the big corporate interests that really run the country, because otherwise it's not Trump who we're going to get next time around. It's someone even worse.
It's going to be a President Ted Nugent. That's what I'm worried about. Something, along those lines.
Right. And you know what? It's like almost like, Ted, to me, I'm thinking, Ted Nugent ain't even rich enough. Like, pick someone as racist as Ted Nugent. Throw in, I guess, someone with the money of I don't know, Elon Musk. Get someone who is as, I don't know, as terrible as...
Ann Coulter, like one of those figures.
Right. Like Trump, I don't like the guy, but every now and then he'll go on TV and like Broken Clock. It's like, yeah, that's pretty funny. He's got a good point there. And his point is usually one that ends up showing his like New York roots, which, he sometimes can't stray from. But we're going to get someone who doesn't even throw anything out like that. Like, we're going to get someone who would be for something even worse than a TPP or something like that.
Yeah, and what I really worry about is, because you said that we're becoming more radicalized in a good way, but I also see radicalization, and I know you probably see this too, on the right, and I worry that the more desperate we become after each successive neoliberal president, as people become more economically disadvantaged, they're going to be more susceptible to and prone to these types of far-right fascists, essentially. I mean, you could see this around the world with, Bolsonaro in Brazil and Bolsonaro. You see this everywhere. The more desperate they become, the more likely they are to opt for someone who's just the crazier person who's just going to offer them relief. And that's kind of what we saw with Trump. And the way that I look at it with Beto O'Rourke is if he gets in and is another Obama, who Obama promised, to change the status quo, and we believed him, but he didn't. If we live through another 4 to 8 years of that type of neoliberalism, then I could only expect the desperation to grow and the radicalization to become more of an issue. Now, certainly there's going to be radicalization on the left as well. I think that I've probably moved to the left since Obama simply because now I'm getting more pissed off, but it's also probably going to happen on the right, and people who are not necessarily prone to taking a stance on the left or the right, they might buy into whatever right-wing propaganda is sold to them, because if somebody is offering basically a solution to their problems, then they're going to take it. Like Donald Trump, he basically said, look, I know what's causing all of your problems. It's immigrants. And people bought that because it was an explanation. It wasn't the proper explanation, but it was one. So, I mean, I worry about what another 4 to 8 years of neoliberalism can do in terms of just the growth of white supremacy and just fascism in America. You know, so it's not necessarily like, oh, these candidates are just clueless and out of touch. It's like, no, we need real reform. We need to change the system. Otherwise, it's going to get worse, you know, and I don't want to be like, you know, an alarmist fear monger, but, you know, you can see it. You know, people are hurting.
Right. I mean, it's a great point you made about the radicalization on the other side, because it is really what happened with the Obama era. I mean, we are seeing people basically, and again, a lot of this is not his fault, like he meant for it to happen. A lot of this just comes from, unfortunately, some of it's from his policies and some of it's from the fact that he was a black man who was president.
Yeah,
and totally. And obviously that latter part of it is completely not something that I'm attributing to him when I'm talking about what you know, things that were on him. But on the other hand, for example, not prosecuting a single person responsible for the 2008 financial crisis, that is on him. And that is something where, you know, people were disenchanted about when he didn't do anything like that, when he didn't do anything about that. And,
yeah.
You know, it's something that I think, for the most part, just looking at the current 2020 contenders on the Democratic who've thrown their hat into the Democratic primary, I would say like all but maybe one or two were really pushing left there. I mean, obviously some more left than others, but I don't know, aside from, I don't know, Amy Klobuchar and maybe Cory Booker, they were all pushing pretty more progressive than I would say the bare minimum would have been in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is nice, because it kind of goes to show the influence that progressives have. Like, everyone is trying to compete to be progressive, and they're trying to outflank Bernie from the left. And it does show that we have influence, but, you know, this is more than just being placated. It's more than just putting on political theater. Like, we actually need someone who will bring about real change. And even if we get Bernie elected, there's no guarantee that he can put forward an agenda. But I think of all people, he's the one that actually has a chance at bringing about social democracy, because, you know, he's not going to be a normal president. Bernie Sanders isn't just going to fight with Congress back and forth. He knows that if we want to get anything, you know, Medicare for all, tuition-free public colleges and universities, it's not just going to be the traditional legislative procedure and the political process. He's going to have to get people in cities across the country to protest and, you know, call. It's going to take action. And he's really the only one that understands it. So it's not even just only about policy to me. It's about politics. And I think Bernie, he understands it on a different level than everyone else. And I think that's really important. So, you know, credit to everyone who's moving left. A lot of it, I think, is probably just lip service and to pass, you know, whatever litmus test we're putting up for them, which is a lot of them. But it's we actually need to not do politics as usual, as was promised with Obama. And, you know, the more that time ticks, the more as we get closer, you know, to climate catastrophe, you know, the more frustrated people are going to become. So I kind of feel like this is like one of our last chances to get someone who would be like an FDR, you know, and just change the system, kind of save capitalism from itself, and maybe do social democracy, or at least start that process to where he's so popular, hopefully, that, you know, successor after Bernie will try to do what he did in the same way that, you know, that was the case with FDR. So, you know, that's my hope, but I see the centrism, and I don't know who's in the mood for this, like with the Beddoes. And of course, there's, you know, there's the people who are going to talk about, oh, well, he's so charismatic and my calves and whatnot. But come on, man. I don't understand.
We should probably, let me pull that tweet up. We should probably at this point explain the calves tweet. So
there's a lot of tweets that are kind of a little bit disturbing with Beto and centrist Twitter.
Well, this one I think is by far the most infamous one, and there's a reason. It's because I think it's great. I'm not going to out this person, even though I know that they're sort of a public online figure who very much does not like Bernie Sanders, I can tell you that much. But this is the tweet that everyone's referencing about Beto and calves. Now, I don't remember how to say this guy's name, because he's already dropped out of the race. Ojeda? Ojeda, thank you. The guy from West Virginia who already dropped out. Also, Avenetti already dropped out, but this was her tweet. Ojeda and Avenetti as candidates are like the guy who thinks good sex is pumping away while you're making a grocery list in your head, wondering when he'll be done. O'Rourke is like the guy who is all sweet and nerdy, but holds you down and makes... I can't even read this part. And makes you come until your calves cramp. Oh, my God. Oh,
it's so bad, man.
I'm like, like, how many retweets did this get? Almost 2,000 retweets, over 11,000 likes. I mean, she was knocked for it. She was loved, beloved for it. It was quite disturbing. Quite disturbing. You shouldn't. Yeah. Listen, please. People, don't project pop culture on these things. Don't project your personal lives on these things. And definitely, please don't project your sexual fantasies on these things. It's just...
Yeah.
Ugh.
We don't appreciate that, ladies and gentlemen. Please don't do that.
Listen. I'm a big supporter of Bernie Sanders. I will never, ever talk about how he makes me climax. I will tell you... Oh, granted he does, but I will never talk about it.
Oh, God. You took it there, Matt. You took it there.
Now, you said something, though, that was interesting about, you know, who knows if Kamala Harris really supports Medicare for All if she was president. But that's the thing, though. Like, it doesn't matter if they're just saying it, because once they say it, we can hold them to it. Now, you can argue with me about how much that actually means anything, but it worked in some areas, not all, but some areas, during other Democratic presidents. Obama was, you know, pushed in areas. I mean, not even halfway, 2 years into his presidency, I'm even being generous there, a year into his presidency, he was looking to reach across the aisle and strike that grand bargain with Republicans to cut Social Security. He left the presidency saying we should expand Social Security. It doesn't just happen.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Times change really fast. So I think that it does say a lot about the willingness to be open to ideas. And like when I hear someone like Kamala Harris say she supports Medicare for All, to me, that doesn't necessarily tell me that she supports it genuinely. It tells me that she knows she has to support it. But at the same time, it is nice to kind of have them tie their own hands here. Because, I mean, regardless of who gets elected, you know, be it Bernie or anyone else, we're going to have to be engaged and activated like never before. You know, because if we actually get a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president, this is going to be our opportunity to do a lot, especially now that there's so much momentum. You know, like I don't know that we've ever had a time in American politics where support for Medicare for All was at 70%. I mean, maybe it was in the New Deal era. I don't know. But I mean, just for now, I've never seen this much momentum. I've never seen this much enthusiasm on the left. And a new generation will be eligible to vote, you know, in next year. So it's exciting. And I think that regardless of who gets in, they're going to have to make concessions to the left in a really big way. And they're going to have to actually deliver policy. Like, we need a big policy that isn't, you know, built on compromise with Republicans. You're just going to have to defeat them. This is a psychopathic death cult. They're not going to come halfway and meet you on anything, you know, so you've got to beat them. And that's what, you know, I hope anyways. I mean, maybe this is wishful thinking because Democrats always find some way to disappoint me. But, you know, I think we're at a time where it's kind of like, I can't remember the name of the theory, but the theory in political science was that most of the time the status quo fights to maintain itself, but every once in a while, like a generation or so, the floodgates will break open and there'll be this rush of change. And the last time we saw that was with the New Deal, and then we probably saw it with Ronald Reagan, albeit in the opposite direction. And I think that we're due for that again because, I mean, I just can't see how the current trajectory that we're on is sustainable. I don't think it is.
Right. And you know, going back to my picks, Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, I want to sort of go into why I like them both. Let's put aside getting really into specifics here. Let's talk about, you know, in terms of specific policies. We know they're Medicare for All. We know they want to break up the big banks. We know that they have, you know, we know where they stand on a multitude of issues. But how they go about getting to them is what I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw a tweet, and that's what's reminding me of this right now. I saw a tweet that I completely agree with. You know, how could Elizabeth Warren possibly feel today, where she probably more so than any other candidate has been putting out policy proposal after policy proposal, specific proposals, and Beto's out there being his vague self, getting all this media attention.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I really like about Warren. She's been really specific about the policy so far. She's always been like that. That's her brand. And that's what I like about her. Bernie, on the other hand, knows politics from a grassroots perspective. He knows how to play the game of politics in terms of how the people can push their politicians to do what's best for their constituents. And he knows that that's where the true power lies. If enough people can get together, come together, then you can push them to do anything.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, it's just a difference how the both of them look at it. I think you really need a combination of the two. But to Bernie's credit, I think we can't do any of those policy proposals Warren is so specific about until we get to that point where we are all, as in all Democrats, are using that bully pulpit to push all the politicians to get done these progressive policies. And, you know, that's sort of where I think, you know, that's just my opinion on why the two of them are so great compared to the rest of the people running. But let's get into these Beto, let's get really deep into Beto here. Oh boy. Oh boy. I'm sounding like that.
Oh yeah. Gotta watch it there, Matt.
Let's get deep into what Beto believes. There we go. Which is nothing. He believes nothing.
He has no core. No core at all.
I'm going to play this clip. And if you don't hear it on your end, Mike, I'm pretty sure you know this specific clip. And for the other clips I'll play, I'll give you a quick summary afterwards. But here's the first clip I want to play. It's Beto O'Rourke on CNN. Well, he's not. He's just talking to a group of people in Iowa today. CNN played the clip. And it's basically him, you know, at one of these rallies, rallying people behind him. And it really, to me, shows who Beto O'Rourke is. Hold on, let me find this clip here. Where the hell is it?
And also note the hand gestures that he makes, because it's such a fake, like, way of conveying excitement. Like, you could tell that he practiced this, and, you know, it was focus group driven. That, yeah, if you use your hands and you flap your hand, you know, and your arm up and down, then that really conveys excitement to people, and it gets them energized, and, you know, young people will love it. Millennials are going to eat that up.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up, because Trump actually, and this is not I think it's actually a fair point that, you know, Trump made fun of the hand gesture thing, which, you know, Trump doing it is obviously stupid because he's an idiot.
Yeah. But what is this? What is the D hand, Trump? Like, what?
Right. And, you know, Bernie does his little finger wag thing. But whatever. I'm glad you brought it up, because it reminded me of Beto was asked about Trump saying something about those hand gestures. And his response was, I'm just going to be me, man.
Which
the problem there is that who the hell is me? Who is Beto O'Rourke? It doesn't mean anything, because if anyone else said that, I'd be like, oh yeah, he's gonna be the sort of, you know, the firebrand that goes out there and isn't afraid to take strong stances on the issues, or he's the guy who comes up with complete policy ideas before he supports something so he could show how it's carried out, or he's someone who at the very least, you know, looks at these progressive issues, says, you know, they're not quite there yet, gives a good-hearted response. Well, I don't agree with it. Gives a well-thought response as to why they don't feel this certain way yet, but said they'll be open to it if they can be convinced or something like that. He's not even that guy. He is, again, he's a faceless man from Game of Thrones. But yeah. Let's play this clip of Beto on CNN rallying the troops, well, from CNN, of Beto in Iowa rallying his supporters.
But these challenges, I am absolutely convinced, will bring out the absolute best in every single one of us. And we have something that almost no other country in the world has. We have the single greatest mechanism to call forth the genius of our fellow human beings. This democracy, more than 320 million people strong, can bring the ingenuity, the creativity, the resolve of an entire country. And each one of these challenges can and will be met. But the foundational challenge to get all of this done is to fix our democracy. Only when it works, and only when each one of us can work within it, will we be able to meet these threats. And so this setting right now, the very first event of our campaign for president, is an example not only of the way that I wish to campaign across this country for every single American, and I could care less your party persuasion, your religion, anything other than the fact that right now we are all Americans and we are all human beings, and we do everything within our power for one another, for this great country, yeah, and for every generation that follows.
What does that even mean? I'm choking on my own because I'm like, I can't even, like, where does one begin with that? We have the single greatest mechanism to call forth the genius of our fellow human beings. This democracy can bring the ingenuity, the creativity, the resolve of an entire country. I see. I hear words, and they're formed in sentences, but they don't mean anything. They mean nothing.
Yeah,
it's like someone,
the hole in his face is making so much noise, but nothing that makes any sense to the average American who just hears these words that sound inspirational. So it's supposed to activate that, you know, that feeling in you that gets you going. But I'm just sitting here, and you're just sitting here. We're like, wait, what the fuck are you even talking about? This doesn't make any sense.
Right. And YouTube live stream comment section, someone said, you know, made a point that Bernie is vague about everything. He never explains how he's going to do anything. Trying to say that, you know, it's no different than Beto being vague. That's not the same at all, and I'll give you an example. Bernie Sanders says he's for Medicare for all. Mm-hmm. Beto O'Rourke, when asked about Medicare for all, suggests that he's not for Medicare for all, but basically this is his line here. I'm convinced we will have to work from as much common ground as possible. No one person or one political party can force this decision on this. First of all, that's bullshit, because we have seen one political party literally force a decision on multiple different policies for years now.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, Obamacare was forced through literally by one single party. And that's when I say forced through, I mean literally. Democrats were the only people who voted for Obamacare.
Yeah. And they took the Republican plan.
Right.
And they still wouldn't vote for their own plan. This was a Heritage Foundation plan. It was Romney Care, and they still wouldn't vote for it.
Right.
So when I hear him say that, it's like, do you know what's been going on for the past decade or so, where Republicans have gone completely crazy?
Right. You know, it's, you know, and again, this person is replying. Beto says he's for universal care. But did he, though? Like, did he really? Because what I saw is that would be great, but we can't do that, so we should just stick with what we've had, what we've got, and make it better. That's what every one of these guys who doesn't want single payer to happen says, because they know it's insanely popular, and they couldn't play up the facade and push what they really want if they actually came out and said they weren't for it.
You're right. No, go ahead.
Listen. Bernie Sanders comes out and makes distinct choices in terms of what he's going to support. He's not vague about that at all. Him not telling us how he's going to do it, why does that matter? Do you know all the intricacies of Obamacare? Have you read all multiple hundreds of pages of Obamacare? Do you know how the all the policy experts who were behind Obamacare pushed it through and made it happen? No, but Obama took the stance that this is what he wanted, and he said, let's make it happen. I don't think it went far enough, but he at least said, I'm gonna make Obamacare happen. This is what I support. Bernie Sanders saying, I support Medicare for all. Does not matter the details behind it. A great example I like to use is when people were literally dying on the streets before the New Deal because there was no Social Security, there was no Medicaid, there was no Medicare. Were people out there demanding Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare? No, those things didn't even exist. The people didn't know what they wanted. FDR was pushed to create the New Deal because people literally were showing him the problems. We're dying. Help us. So the people in charge, the people who we elect to office, whose job it is to do these things, said, okay, we're going to figure out how to fix this. They didn't go, well, before we fix this, we would like the people's input to know, you know, how do we do this? How do we fix these things? No, it doesn't matter. Just stand for something. Say this is what you support. And the people who, you know, the policy wonks will make it happen because it's necessary. Look at the Green New Deal. It's gonna, you know, it's gonna cost a lot of money. It's that simple. We gotta make it happen. There's no choice. The future of human life on Earth literally depends on it. So the fact that we're gonna, I mean, are we gonna sit around and go, well, let's, everyone's gotta sit around and work out these hundreds of pages to figure out how we're gonna afford it. No, make it happen, force it into law, and then we'll find the money. I'll tell you, once it's a law, we'll find the money. Once that thing is signed, the money will show up. I'll guarantee you that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and can I just say this? So, for the person in the chat that says that Beto is in favor of universal care, I need people to understand that they're going to have to do more than just take a candidate at their word. They're going to have to read between the lines. They're going to have to be savvy, because what we're seeing now is centrist Democrats co-opt the language that progressives are using. So what do I mean by that? So if you tuned into John Delaney's town hall, for example, what did he say? I believe that healthcare is a right. Does he support Medicare for all? No, he does not.
I gotta stop you there for a minute. Whoa, John Delaney. I forgot about that guy. Listen, if you were to ask me to name every single person running, I would have named Andrew Yang. I would have named Tulsi Gabbard. I would have named Pete Butt, whatever his name is, the
booty judge.
Yeah, thank you.
Judging that booty.
I may not be able to pronounce his name, but I know he's running. Mm-hmm. I could even tell you Howard Schultz. Mr. Independent over there. John Delaney. He would have been the one guy I left out. I would have even probably added the addendum that, yeah, at one point, Ojeda and Avenetti were running. But they're not in it anymore. Before I would have remembered Delaney. So props to you for remembering John Delaney. Continue.
Yeah. Well, so... so, like, with him and, like, these centrists... what they all say, and even Tom Steyer, before, when he was like floating the idea of a run, he was talking about, I believe in universal care. Okay, they don't mean single payer. They don't mean a national health system. They mean universal access. And people like to jump down my throat whenever I say, oh, they said access. And they say, well, what's the problem with that? Well, access is not the same thing as something being free at the point of service. So if Beto says, I support universal care, you need to know what specifically he's talking about. Now, he said something on, I think it was Iowa Radio today, where he was asked about Medicare for All. And what he said is, well, I believe that the quickest way to get there is to protect our current institutions, meaning that we protect Obamacare and we expand Medicaid. Now, think about how stupid that sounds. The quickest way to get to Medicare for All is to protect what we already have. No, the quickest way to get to Medicare for All is you codify it into law. You don't have to just defend what we have. You don't have to, you know, defend the status quo. So they're going to try to sell you on something. They're essentially going to try to gaslight you into believing they support Medicare for All because they know they don't have a choice. The base is not going to accept them not supporting Medicare for All. So the goal is to get you to think they support it. Pete Buttigieg, what is he calling his public option plan? Medicare for All Who Wants It. That's not Medicare for All. That's a public option. So you really have to be savvy and understand that you need to look at the specifics and have them be very specific. And, you know, the problem is that I don't think most reporters are savvy enough to know what these buzzwords are, what the red flags are, you know, when someone is just trying to co-opt the progressive language. They don't know. So you've got to be able to spot that for yourself. And I get it. It's tricky. But understand that unless they're unequivocally saying, I support Medicare for all, and there's no something in between, first we do this and that, unless they say Medicare for all, those three words, they're not serious about it. So Beto does not support Medicare for all. And if he did, he had the chance to co-sponsor it in the House of Representatives, H.R. 676. He never co-sponsored that bill. And the reason why he said he's not co-sponsoring H.R. 676 was because he said that he sided more with Bernie's bill. And he would have co-sponsored that bill if he was elected to the Senate and beat Ted Cruz. But why does that not make sense? These bills are essentially the same. The only difference is that Bernie's bill is actually a little bit weaker. It doesn't provide long-term care, and the rollout is 4 years. He's going to change that to match Pramila Jayapal's newest bill, from what I understand. But you've got to understand that these people are bullshitting you, and they're going to tell you what they think you want to hear, but you've got to be able to read between the lines. You know, that's essentially really going to be important this time.
Right, right. And, you know, someone made the, again, same person who was backing Beto, and I'm glad this person's commenting, because it's
a
good conversation for sure.
Absolutely.
I don't want to call them out, so I'm not going to say their name on the show, but please, I enjoy this stuff. They said, what does it matter if Beto supports single payer or public option? We don't have 60 votes anyways, and Bernie doesn't want to end the filibuster. So I make the point that it'll be a lot easier and probably a lot more possible to push Bernie Sanders to end the filibuster than it will be to push a President Beto to do both those things.
Yeah, and I don't even know that Bernie is closed off to the idea of ending the filibuster. I'm not sure that that's correct.
He's sort of, I don't know about that specific, but he has said some things about, you know, keeping some of these institutional rules in place because he supports those sort of traditional. He's got to be pushed on this if it's not. I think this person's actually right. Also, I'm pretty sure Bernie's come out against packing the courts, which, no, sorry, buddy, you got to do that.
You have to pack the courts, absolutely.
And I think it's possible to push a guy like Bernie more so than any of these other people, which is why
1,000%.
And we've already seen it. We've already seen him become even more progressive in areas where he was weaker on, you know, sort of like gun control, his tone around race issues. Mm-hmm. For sure. He's not perfect. I've criticized him many times.
There's nobody that's perfect in this race.
Absolutely. Well, there's nobody who's perfect. No, yeah, of course.
Exactly. If I were to run, I wouldn't be perfect. You know what I mean? Like, it's nobody is going to satisfy you 100%. It's just, you know, the closest to that target. So, yeah.
Well, I got to do a little pushback there. If I ran for president, you'd have the perfect candidate.
But I don't know. Would you be able to make women's calves tremble or whatever that tweet was?
Oh, I'll make more than their calves. I'm not even going to go there.
I don't know that.
I'll make more than their calves. No, but I'm completely, my mind is just, I don't even know where I am anymore.
You keep going there and it's just not okay.
But I don't know, man. Let's get all right. Yeah, this is what I want to bring up. So, you know, looking more into Beto's record, it's important to point this out. Beto O'Rourke had one, and this is a perfect stat for folks who like to this weird contingent on online, who is sick and tired of white men like Bernie running, but also super excited for a white guy like Beto O'Rourke to run.
Yeah, which, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Beto O'Rourke had one of the most racially diverse districts, but had literally no top staff of color.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's really weird, actually.
He is one of the six offenders. One of the six worst offenders of House members with the most diverse districts and no top staff of color. This is according to the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, who is published in The Washington Post. Also, another thing to bring up about Beto O'Rourke is that he consistently was one of the more conservative Democrats in the House when he was in the House. He was often voted along with Republicans, even now, for people who are about to follow up with, well, you know, he was a Democrat in Texas. It was, you know, it's a little bit different for him than in blue states. Fine, if that's your argument, okay. But this is also taking into consideration that point. Even when the majority of Democrats in Texas voted for or against something, Beto would often side with the Republicans.
And I don't think that that's very persuasive because, like, his district was actually fairly, it was a safe Democratic seat from my understanding.
Right. Well,
so I don't even really buy that argument.
Of course, one of the most diverse districts in the country. I believe. Yeah.
So he could have, he had some wiggle room, to say the least, to be progressive, but he wasn't. I mean, he voted to fast track the TPP. He voted to honestly weaken Obamacare two times. So I don't understand how, if you are opting for someone whose policies are similar to Beto's, whatever that may be, because we don't really know, why wouldn't you just go for someone like Kamala Harris, who is essentially the same ideologically speaking? She's maybe, or she's definitely, I think, to the left of Beto, but she's still like in that same camp, that same, you know, I guess, right, establishment wing, if you will.
Right.
So I don't get the appeal of Beto at all.
I could see myself, if it came down to it, supporting Kamala Harris. I mean, I voted for Hillary in 2016 when it came down to it.
See, I'm an open question on that because I'm in Oregon. So if somebody gets to the general and they pivot to the right, then I'm just going to default back to green. But in a swing state, I absolutely would support someone, you know, to defeat Donald Trump 100%.
Right.
But yeah, in terms of like Kamala, I would support her in the general if she did not pivot, because that's what I want to see. Right. Because in the primary, you're going to see a lot of people run to the left. But if they start moving to the right in the general, that's going to be, you know, my cue to bow out, because that pisses me off. It's so disingenuous. So we'll see. But yeah, as it stands now, totally. For me, my goal is to move the Overton window. So I want the leftist candidate possible to not just win the primary, but I want them to remain leftist and win the general. Because even if they can't get anything passed, like that person brought up the point about, you know, the public option versus Medicare for All, just the fact that somebody supports Medicare for All in and of itself is really important, because we've got to shift the Overton window. I mean, everything is skewed to the right in this country.
Right.
So we have to change that, because it's making politics toxic. It's making the country ungovernable.
Right. Exactly. And I want to get a little more specific here, actually, about some of these bills. So Dave Sirota did the work, and he reviewed 167 votes that O'Rourke cast during his six-year tenure in the House. And he oftentimes voted to help pass Republican-sponsored legislation. He voted for GOP bills that reinforced Republicans' anti-tax ideology. He chipped away at the Affordable... he voted to chip away at the Affordable Care Act, which he says he supports. He helped weaken Wall Street regulations. He boosted the fossil fuel industry. He bolstered Trump's immigration policy. I think you even brought this up in a video that you did on the issue, where he actually sided with Republicans to help them discriminate against Black Americans when it came to auto loans.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those things that didn't make sense. And I think I posted that in December, so it's been a while. So I'm a little bit fuzzy on the details, but essentially what was supposed to protect, you know, Black Americans from discrimination, Republicans didn't want that, and Beto agreed with them, which honestly doesn't make any sense to me, because I feel like it's a no-brainer. If you're liberal, I mean, it should be a no-brainer if you're in the Republican Party too, but of course, you know, different circumstances now with them, but because they're crazy. But yeah, there are some votes that he doesn't want to talk about that he's got to explain, because that is just bananas. And some of these things he's done, I think, are unforgivable if you're a Democrat. Like, to chip, like, Obamacare is basically, even the most centrist Democrats will run on Obamacare and talk about how proud they are about Obamacare. But to chip away at that is like, that's a new level of just conservatism when you're supposed to be running to be the standard bearer on the left that I don't know how people will be able to see past if they find out about it, that is, because I don't think people know.
Right. Right. I mean, it really is. It's just stunning to see some of these things that he's, and this one's another, this I just learned about today, actually. Cause I'm not that familiar with, local politics in Texas. But apparently Beto refused to endorse a queer woman of color who lost, Gina Ortiz Jones, who was running for Congress in Texas. He refused to endorse her. And in fact, went out of his way to put support, or at the very least, praise her Republican opponent in the race.
That makes no sense. I haven't heard about this either.
Will Hurd. And apparently, the relationship between Will Hurd and Beto is strong enough that Will Hurd recently came out, actually, and said, and props to Beto for making the smart move to help him out during that congressional race, Will Hurd had to come out as a Republican and say he would never support Beto O'Rourke for president. So props for Beto for that. I'll scratch your back, but you aren't going to scratch mine. Good, good move there, Beto. But it's stunning to me that this is the guy that people who say they care about these sort of things support. It's gross, really, to me. And of course, I'm just gonna put this up really fast. Again, you won't see it, but everyone else will see it. I don't know if I could support a guy that live streamed himself getting a dental cleaning. Here's that clip.
I'm here at the dentist, and we're going to continue our series on the people of the border. I'm here with Diana. Diana's going to tell us a little bit about growing up.
This is terrible. Terrible.
Did you see Vic Berger's edit of that?
Oh, man, I did a while ago. But yeah.
It's a little bit of the same thing. He just kind of like really emphasizes certain absurdities. Yeah, that was weird to me. I don't get that. You know, I kind of feel like he's trying to be like, hello, fellow kids, to the millennials. But it's like, we're not filming ourselves at the dentist. You know, don't get the impression, because people on YouTube film themselves doing everything, that that's how all of us are. Because most of us are normal and would not do weird things like that.
Right. Right. Let's. Also, before I forget, I want to bring this up. He's already been, on the day he announced his run, he's already been endorsed by a number of politicians. Interesting to see who they are, though. He's being backed by Blue Dogs.
Yeah.
He's being backed by the moderate pro-Wall Street New Democrat Coalition, which I should also add the addendum. When he was in Congress, he was a part of.
Yep.
So this guy, you know, it's centrist. He's the guy centrist and conservative Democrats have been waiting for. Because look how quickly they endorsed him the second he jumped in.
He may be more conservative than Biden. And Biden was never like super conservative. But like, I don't know if you saw the article from The Nation that he's trying to be the anti-Bernie. I feel like Beto is the anti-Bernie. He's probably one of the more conservative. I'd put him in the same camp as Klobuchar. Like, very the only thing difference is that Klobuchar will just own it. She'll be like, yeah, I'm a centrist.
Oh, she'll just own you with a binder, phone call afraid to your future employee, with
she'll eat her salad with a comb.
Right. I always got to bring this up when I talk about her, but I hate that people are focused on the salad thing and the binder thing. That shit is secondary to me than the fact she would literally call people's future boss so they could not leave her.
It's weird.
It's that to me should be disqualifying. I mean, literally, that should be disqualifying. I can't think of anything worse. That is truly, if we're going to talk about something being Trump-like, that is truly Trumpian.
It's 100% abusive behavior to your own staff. And the reason why I'm so fixated on the salad and the comb story, because admittedly, I did talk about that and not the call. Well, maybe I touched on it, but I'm fixated on that because I'm just trying to visualize how it happened. like, you know, the fact that she not only ate her entire salad reportedly with a comb, but then she had her aide scream, like she screamed at him and told him to clean it off. So I'm fixated on the details there, which is why I can't get off. But yeah, I think that you are right that that level of just, I guess, abuse really is something to talk about. Because, I mean, I'm going to focus on policies, of course, but if you're going to create a toxic work environment, then that does say something about her character that is important, I think, if you're running for president.
Oh, I think some of these things, especially the calling boss thing, I think that is straight up there with policy, because it tells you just how she views workers, how she views people below her.
I didn't think of it that way.
I mean, they're literally just there to do a boss's bidding, and and do her bidding specifically in these cases. And, you know, if you don't respect the people who are working for you, then how are you going to respect workers who aren't working for you? I mean,
That's such a good point.
It's truly gross. Like, how can you be a labor advocate if that's how you view people who work? I mean,
if you don't have empathy for the people around you, how do you have empathy, you know, for people across the world? You know, she can right. continue the drone program, no problem, and not even think about the human consequences.
Right. And the binder thing, I get it. It was physical, but listen, their thing is that she threw it on the floor and it bounced up or whatever. I don't care the details behind that. It's messed up. She did it, but even that is temporary. You know, she threw it. It hit somebody. At worst, you're in pain for a bit. It's obviously abusive, but you know, it's a moment. Calling the boss thing will literally affect that person's entire life. You will change the trajectory of that person's career going forward indefinitely. Yeah. There's no, like, it will always, things could have been different if they got that job. And then also you're affecting, you know, you're affecting their income stream, which means you're affecting their family. The results of what she did doing that is just abhorrent. And it's far reaching. So that's why I like to focus on that one. But
it reminds me of like these really, these relationships where they're abusive and then you have an abusive spouse that won't let you leave, which makes it worse when you want to leave. You know, it's like if you see like the same stuff in movies where they'll threaten to harm themselves if you leave. I kind of feel like that's the way that, like, that's the picture that I get in my head when I read these stories about Amy Klobuchar. It's troublesome.
Right. I mean, and also with the binder thing, the reason I sort of like the binder thing is that it gave me a wide open, you know, it just basically laid up a joke for me where I could say that she tossed me around. That's true. But but let's, before we end this, there's just a few more things I want to touch on. And you brought up the whole Beto's young, and so they think maybe that'll attract young people to centrism or whatever he's for. There was a lot of talk about Bernie being Beto being the next Bernie. And I saw this in your video and I had to pull it because it's ridiculous. The Week put together this horrific, you said how horrifying it was, right? This Photoshop.
I still get nightmares. Right? I still get nightmares from that picture.
I'm going to pull it up on the YouTube stream right now. Oh my God. Just be ready for this.
Look away, people. Look away.
It is an amalgamation, I guess, a combination of,
it's a catastrophe.
Beto and Bernie Sanders, just, oh my God, just, oh no, oh,
just can't unsee that. So bad.
Okay, but all right, but let's be clear here. If it's not obvious from what we've been talking about, Beto O'Rourke is not Bernie Sanders in any way whatsoever. And not only is he not Bernie Sanders, in terms of, you know, policy and being a progressive, which I should add an addendum here. When he's asked if he's a progressive, and I have a clip of this to play later, he basically says he's not, pretty much. Mm-hmm. He's not, literally not in any way Bernie Sanders. The only reason people think he's like Bernie Sanders is because he's young. So they think he will attract young people. And I got to tell you, if you think Bernie Sanders is not still. Regardless of whether he wins the primary or not, I am making this prediction now, 100% guarantee it, that at the end of the day, no matter what happens, Bernie Sanders will win the youth vote once again. No doubt in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Easy peasy. Because young people, time and time again, have showed they are not stray. They are not, you know, brought astray by platitudes, by a young charismatic figure. Young people care about issues that will affect their lives: climate change, healthcare, education. And Bernie Sanders has shown them that he is their guy and that he's been their guy for a long time. And they know that. That's why in 2016, Bernie Sanders became the most popular young people candidate in American history. He, before the primaries were even over, and this is not me. This is literally something Vox looked into. It was Vox who declared Bernie Sanders the most popular young people candidate in modern U.S. history. Before the election was even over, the primaries were even over, he surpassed Obama's 2008 young people record. He had more young people vote for him in the primary than Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's youth vote combined.
Yeah.
It's stunning that people would think they're going to just be for Bernie Sanders that much, that hardcore into Bernie, and then Beto O'Rourke comes down going, I'm going to bring hope and change to the various demographics that swarm all of America in the country because everything is going bad, but we could be good.
You have the ingenuity and the mechanism to make our dreams come true. It's like,
right.
People are pissed off, man. They want solutions, real solutions, and Beto's not bringing that. He's this amorphous blob that, you know, the centrism people and the establishment, I visualize him as like a Sims character where you're like picking all the perfect attributes for a candidate. He has like the thumb gesture, he has the platitudes. He is the concoction of the establishments. He's like their perfect candidate. So, yeah, we're not going to fall for that.
Right. So let's end it here with this clip I pulled. Now, there's a few parts I want to go into it. CNN, Anderson Cooper, literally just a couple, maybe an hour or two before earlier, interviewed the Vanity Fair reporter who basically wrote that profile of Beto O'Rourke that showed up online yesterday, that basically let everyone know that he was going to run for president, and he announced today. He literally, Beto in this profile literally says, man, I'm just born to be in it. That's his whole reasoning for running. First of all, can you imagine any of the women who are running saying that? They would be torn to shreds.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, can anything be in terms of what we just talked about him being the next Bernie? Can you imagine Bernie Sanders saying that?
It's disgusting.
Literally,
oh, this is my dream. It's about me. It's like, who wants to hear that?
Right. Literally, Bernie goes out there and says the opposite, which is funny because people think that the anti-Bernie patrol, the 8%ers, the donuts on Twitter, they think Bernie is Mr. Narcissist. When the dude, literally since 2016, every time there's a Bernie chant at his rallies, he stops people and goes, no, I can't do it alone. It's all about you. You're going to make this happen. His 2020 campaign slogan is literally, not me, us.
Yeah.
But apparently, they hate Bernie, but Mr. I'm just born to be in it. I want to be in it, he also said. Beto's choice is the headline on the Vanity Fair cover. He's the man of the people. His father-in-law is a Forbes says he's not a billionaire. Only Forbes corrected the record and said that he is only worth $500 million.
Oh, I'm glad that they corrected that.
So Beto O'Rourke will inherit a lot of money. Because his wife's father is very rich and wealthy.
He's a millionaire himself, too. Like a multimillionaire now, I believe. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm pretty sure.
Are you sure?
He's very well off.
The dude listens to Fugazi in Minor Threat. Are you sure? Fugazi or whatever.
And he drives a truck, you know, and goes to the dentist and films it. So he can't be rich. He's just like us. Don't we all film ourselves going to the dentist and getting a root canal?
Right, 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 right. But let's play this clip.
Go ahead, go ahead.
Right, right. I mean, I always live stream myself at the dentist, at the, when I...
taking a dump.
Right, right, right. Right, I can't wait to live stream myself when I hit that age where I need to, you know, go into the doctor and they check my, I don't know, my prostate. I don't know.
Oh man!
All right, let's. That'll be the. That's the Matt Binder campaign guarantee. Let's get to this clip.
Too much, man.
All right, this is from Anderson Cooper. Well, they first played this. I want to just play another clip of Beto. This is they played this before the Vanity Fair guy went on. Just another clip of Beto spewing a lot of nothing.
I'm just born to be.
This setting right now, the very first event of our campaign for president, is an example not only of the way that I wish to campaign across this country for every single American, and I could care less your party persuasion, your religion, anything other than the fact that right now we are all Americans and we are all human beings, and we do everything within our power for one another, for this great country, and for every generation that follows.
O'Rourke, as you may remember, gained nationwide attention when he ran.
It's just, you know, basically he's out there going, oh, we're going to campaign for every American, regardless of party persuasion, for the future, for the generations. It's a lot of nothing. It's just word vomit. But I just want to play that one because I love playing Beto saying a lot of nothing. But here is this. Let me get to the first clip with the Vanity Fair. The Vanity Fair reporter talking on Anderson Cooper. This is 2 minutes in.
I'm just born to be in it. That's what.
Well, I pressed him on a few of them.
Right.
And I would say, you know, he has opinions about things, but he doesn't, you know, the more you press him on him, the fuzzier it gets. Now, the question is whether he'll develop those as he goes along. You know, climate change, obviously, he's very energized about that. He talked about it this morning in Iowa. And he talked about it with me as well. He was, you know, in spirit, he advocates for the New Green Deal. But, you know, if you ask him about specifics, he might say, oh, I like it. We'll see. You know, so there's some fuzziness there for sure.
All right. So basically, he goes on to say how, you know, he's very spirited. He feels very strongly about climate change. But if you ask him about the Green New Deal, he'll go, you know, in spirit, I think it's a good idea, but, you know, we have to see what we can do. If you're strong about climate change, if you feel strongly about climate change, you're for the Green New Deal. And if you feel so strongly about climate change that there's areas in the Green New Deal that you can criticize because you think even something even better could be done, you know what that is. Mm-hmm. You don't go, well, I got to look more into it and see, maybe, you know, I've... It's a lot. He's nothing. You can project whatever you want on Beto because he says a lot of these random words that I guess, depending on who's listening, will just interpret it in whatever way best fits their ideology.
Yeah, you know what this reminds me of, Matt? The way that I think, I don't remember who explained it this way. Maybe it was Kyle on Secular Talk. But the reason why Make America Great Again was such a good slogan and the reason why it worked was because people can basically insert or impose whatever they think that time is when America was great. So they can visualize something without him actually telling them when America was great again, because he's never said when America is great. So with Beto O'Rourke, he says all these things and it's basically a blank slate. It's like Mad Libs and you can insert whatever you want and think, because, I mean, he speaks in such broad terms that you could almost justify, oh, he said this or this. Like, I was saying he's not in support of Medicare for All, but the person in the chat earlier said, well, he says he supports universal care. So it's like you can take away whatever you want. That's such a good point. It's frustrating because it's like I think people nowadays – I think they're going to see through that. Like, I think people want and expect more in specifics, and we deserve it. And if you claim to care about climate change, then You can't just be like, oh, well, I have to look into the Green New Deal. If you're not supporting the Green New Deal, then you better have a hell of a plan to, you know, you better have a hell of a plan to come up with something else, like some other way that you can meet the IPCC's 12-year timeline. But it's just, there's nothing there. There's no there with Beto. And I just don't get it. I don't get it.
Right. Right. And here's the last clip we'll play before we wrap it up. It's also from this. And to me, this says everything. This is the Vanity Fair reporter who profiled Beto, basically telling, in his view from spending time with him, what Beto's strategy is here. Who is Beto going to sort of go after? What is he going to present himself as? The guy who says he's not a progressive because he doesn't like labels, man. This is who Beto is.
I'm just born to be...
sincere and kind of wholesome in some way.
You asked him if he's a progressive. What did he say?
Well, he said he doesn't like labels, right? Which is a very Obama thing to say. He wants to kind of rise above it. I think that what he wants to do politically is sort of thread the needle between the Bernie Sanders grassroots and the Joe Biden centrism. And in a way, but those are the two candidates I think are most threatened by him, mm-hmm. in a way, because he could borrow from both of their platforms while being half their age, which yeah. is a thing.
So, basically, he's going to thread the needle between Bernie Sanders grassroots and Joe Biden centrism. How is he going to do that? How is he going to... What do you know of any grassroots centrism? What does that even mean? I mean, the guy thinks that because he raised so much money during his Senate race against Ted Cruz, he's going to have that same grassroots fire for him that Bernie has in the presidential race. Buddy, people were donating so much to you because you were running a high-profile Senate race against Ted Cruz, a man everyone in the country pretty much hates.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same at all. And you were the one guy in the race against Ted Cruz. You're in a whole different ballgame here. People were giving you money and could also give Kamala Harris money if she was a candidate then. They could give, you know, anyone else who was running for Senate money too. But if they got to pick a single presidential candidate, they probably aren't going to pick you. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and what he's describing is weird. Like, I kind of feel like he's setting up this false dichotomy between grassroots and centrism, because what Joe Biden is essentially is a corporatist. So you can't be a grassroots centrist or really a grassroots corporatist, because these are things that are mutually exclusive. So you either have to be a grassroots candidate or you can be, you know, a corporatist. But the reason why Joe Biden is a centrist and a corporatist is because he takes that corporate cash. So it doesn't, like, what he's describing doesn't really make sense. What it tells me is that he wants to have it both ways, because he sees that there is this divide in the Democratic Party between the, you know, the Clinton wing, or the establishment wing, if you will, and the progressive Sanders wing. And I think he just wants to have his cake and eat it too, rather than, you know, pick a side. But you can't. If you don't pick a side, you're inadvertently choosing a side. You're telling us you're part of the establishment. You know, so it's just, it's a weird thing to even say. It kind of shows that he doesn't really have his finger on the pulse of America. He isn't, like, you need to look at polls. As focus group driven as you seem to be, look at a poll once in a while. Like, it's the policies that are actually populist and progressive that Bernie Sanders is running on. So why would you claim to be a grassroots centrist when, I mean, who's vying for that? It's just, it makes no sense to me. I don't get Beto. I don't get the appeal. I think that he is still banking on that 2018 momentum. But like you said, Matt, you're going up against Ted Cruz. And back then, anyone would support you over Ted Cruz. But now, when we have just probably the biggest field, the most diverse field, at least in our lifetimes, why? You're not bringing anything new to the table. It's just, it's odd that he thinks he has a chance. I think he's hoping to reignite the flame from 2018, but I feel like he's going to be in for a wake-up call.
Yeah, I'm. It's interesting to me that there's been no announcement so far. As far as I've seen, let me check really quick. But what I was going to say was no announcement so far about how much he's raised. Everyone touts their first 24-hour fundraising drive.
I was curious about that too.
Yeah, there's nothing out there. You know, usually they would give updates about how much they've done in this amount of time. I mean, Bernie raised a ton of money in the first few hours, and then in 24 hours, he raised more than I believe any primary candidate has ever raised in the first 24 hours. In as long as this has been going on, and you know, it's one thing to it's incredibly selfish, and I want to end it with this actually, because I know I've been holding you and saying that we've been ending it for probably like 20-30 minutes now, but I want to end it on this. It's incredibly selfish what he's doing, because as much as we've knocked him for, as a presidential candidate, we also realize the politics of Texas. And listen, I would love to see Democrats eventually in a national race win Texas. I don't think it's going to happen yet. I don't think Bernie could do it. I don't think Kamala could do it. I don't think Beto can do it. And I think, you know, Beto came close against Cruz in Texas, but he lost. And I'll guarantee you that whatever numbers Cruz did, Trump is going to do a lot more. Because Cruz is basically just he's a Republican. We got to vote for him. And this is Texas. We like our Republicans. No one likes Ted Cruz. Trump is beloved by the Republican base. The Republicans that didn't come out for Cruz are going to come out for Trump. And the Republicans who did come out for Cruz are going to come out for Trump. I guarantee it. There's going to be no one who voted for Cruz who, in the Senate race, who isn't going to come out and vote for Trump. There's going to be plenty of people who didn't vote for Cruz, who didn't come out for Cruz, who's going to come out for Trump too. So I just don't see it happening. So he doesn't even bring the Texas thing to the table. Mm-hmm. So, but what he could have done is been a strong candidate for the 2020 Texas Senate seat in Texas that comes up in 2020. And Cornyn would have been a lot easier for Beto to defeat, in my opinion.
I agree with you.
Then a Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically is just, you know, props to Sherrod Brown for realizing that there's no room for him in the race. And it was much more important for him to keep his seat in the Senate in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredibly selfish of someone like Beto O'Rourke to say, it's just, I'm born for this man, and not look at the bigger picture of where strategically he is needed.
Yeah.
And I just think that says everything about the guy.
Yeah.
It's the first 24 hours of, not even 24 hours yet, of Beto O'Rourke. And I've seen enough of the guy on TV already.
I'm sick of him.
And I've seen so much of him, and I can't tell you a single thing he stands for. But
that's such a bad thing if you're running and nobody knows. People who, like you and I, who follow this stuff for a living, if we don't know what you stand for, that's bad. That's really bad. And let me say this about his donations, because I haven't seen the numbers too. If it was a good number, I feel like he would be bragging. Like, I would be bragging. Bernie was bragging, you know, when it was a good number. So
I think there are people who are so delusional, they think that he might come close to Bernie's number. I would be shocked if he even approached Kamala's number.
I actually agree with that. I feel like, yeah, I agree with that. If he raises $1 million in a day, that will be really, really solid. I don't think he's going to touch Bernie. I mean, we'll see, right? We'll see. But I feel like it's been half a day now. We should be seeing some at least preliminary numbers from his campaign. We're not seeing anything, so
listen,
we'll see.
I am guaranteeing you right now, I'm trying to think of what I can offer up. I will live stream a expedited prostate exam.
Oh no!
If Beto O'Rourke approaches Bernie Sanders' number, now what does approach mean? What did Bernie raise again? Like 8 million, something like that.
It was like 5.9 million in the first 24 hours.
Okay, I think the first week was like 8 million or something.
Yeah. It was like actually like 10 million in the first week.
If he reaches, I don't know. I shouldn't get too specific about this. I should give myself some wiggle room. So let's leave it at that. But I'm guaranteeing you that it's not even going to come close. I'll be shocked if he hits Kamala Harris's numbers. And actually, I feel really bad for Kamala if he beats her numbers, because I think she deserves it a lot more than he does. And I would much rather welcome a Bernie versus Kamala primary race than a Bernie versus Beto primary race.
Yeah, I'm with you there. If it's got to come down to anyone on the establishment side, like, I hope that she's one of the last standing out of the other options.
Right.
But yeah, if he raises, should we? No, maybe we shouldn't commit. I was going to say, maybe we should commit to like shave our beards or something if he raises Bernie's numbers. But I don't really want to do that. Although I am confident that he won't. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know.
You know what? I will get a this is not easier for me.
Can we shave our heads and our eyebrows and our beards?
I'm not going to do that, but I will get a haircut. People have been on the YouTube live stream constantly asking me, dude, You're looking like a caveman or something. Letting the hair and the beard. Listen, it's the winter, guys. I do this every winter. I do not get a haircut. I just let everything. I need warmth, man. New York is cold. But because I was gonna do so anyway, I will get a haircut. But yeah, I don't even think I need to worry
about
it.
And a prostate exam.
And a prostate exam. All right, Mike. Mike Figurado. Did I say that right?
Figurado.
Fuck. Mike Figurado.
That's close enough, man. I'll give it to you.
Mike Figurado of the Humanist Report. What's the best place for people to find you?
If you just go to humanistreport.com, then it's kind of like the hub for the YouTube, Twitter, everything. So humanistreport.com. Yeah, I have a new video pretty much every day on YouTube, so you can tune in. And if you want to listen to, another beta male soy boy cuck rant, even though there's a ton of them, but if you want another one in your daily schedule, then hopefully I can give you something new. I don't know.
Perfect. Everyone should go check out Mike's YouTube channel and subscribe. I'll tell you this much right now, Mike. You got to let your YouTube subscribers also know about this appearance on my show because you got a lot of YouTube subscribers and I need some of them.
Yeah, I'm down. Hey, send me the link and I'll upload it to my channel. I think people will. Because I didn't, like, I've been following, for all of Matt's viewers, I've been following Matt on Twitter forever. Like, I've been watching him since he was on, Majority Report. I didn't know that you had your own podcast. So, I think people just, they would follow you if they knew. So maybe there's other people that were just ignorant to it like me. But yeah, I'm down. I think you have a good thing going.
It is surprising to me. I'm honestly terrible at promoting myself because I probably hear at least once a week, someone say to me online, dude, I watched all your shit on Majority Report. You're doing your own thing now? What? I didn't even know about it. I'm terrible at promoting. Oh, man. I should be ashamed. Mike, thank you so much for joining me. Thanks, hope to have you on again soon, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of opportunities to talk about literally the next 20 people who are going to end up jumping into this race.
There's a lot, at the very least. There's a lot.
Take care.
You too.
All right, people. Let me pull up. Let me do a little self-promotion now and thank all of the wonderful patrons who subscribe and make this show happen. You can go to patreon.com/MattBinder and you can support this show really with anything you can afford. I suggest $5 a month. You can give more, you can give less. Obviously, you can give nothing, but then you can't subscribe to the Patreon channel. The Patreon, whatever it's called. But these people do subscribe to Patreon. And if it wasn't for these fine folks, you wouldn't be watching/listening to me right now. Abigail T., Adam Q., Alan B., Andrew H., Ayahuasca Communist, Benji A, Bobby M, Brooke H, Chi, Christine H, Clement C, Colin R, Cecily, C, Dank Uger, Dave K, David H Z, Dragon Slayer, Dum 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 Dum, Emily M, Froz K, Francis Z, Greg D, Ian Curtis J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jordan V, Joseph R, Josh C, Katie S, Marcos R, Max W, User Me, Michael J, Michael M, Misfit Demit, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Nam Dinet, Omid M, Romina O, Sina, Struggle Session, which I gotta reach out to those guys. Get them on the show. At least one of them, if I can't get all of them. TM, Tamney G, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Tom G, Tom M, Trine E, Will P, and Zarin. Folks, you can also be on this list next time around. Patreon.com/MattBinder. And it's also just not to get on the list. It's, you know, eventually it'd be wonderful to do more than one show a week. Eventually it'd be nice to do multiple shows per week. Eventually it'd be nice to do more than just these shows. Do various different clips. Go to events and stream from there. It'd be cool to go to CPAC next year. Who knows? You guys make it happen with your donation. Also support this show by going to iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And give it a rating. Give it a star rating. Give it a written review. Subscribe to the podcast at doomedpod.com. Subscribe on YouTube at doomed.tv. It will take you right to the YouTube channel. Also, because I now have a certain amount of subscribers, the YouTube channel is reachable by just going to youtube.com/MattBinder. No more youtube.com/user/channel and a whole bunch of random algorithmically generated codes. It's youtube.com/MattBinder or doomed.tv. Both will take you to the YouTube page. And you can subscribe. Super simple. All right, folks. If you're watching on YouTube, if you are a Patreon subscriber, I am going to the member half. I will read some of your comments. And if you are neither of those things, then thanks for listening. See you all next time on Doomed!